From 50,000 miles up, the situation looked promising. It was a middle-sized, brown and green, inviting-looking planet, with no sign of cities or any other such complications. I turned to Holdreth. Well, what do you think? Looks fine to me. Temperature's about 70 down there. Nice and warm and plenty of air. I think it's worth a try. Davison came strolling out from the storage hold, smelling of animals as usual. He was holding one of the blue monkeys we picked up on Alferaz, and the little beast was crawling up his arm. We've found a planet, I said. How's the storage space in the hold? Don't worry about that. We've got room for a whole zoo full. We can't go back to Earth with just a couple of blue monkeys and some anteaters, you know. Aside from being a collecting team for the Zoological Department of the Bureau of Interstellar Affairs, we also double as a survey ship, and the planet down below was listed as unexplored on our charts. I glanced out at the mottled brown and green ball spinning slowly in the viewport and felt the warning twinge of gloom that came to me every time we made a landing on a new and strange world. The planet was inhabited, all right. We hadn't had the ship on the ground more than a minute before the local fauna began to congregate. We stood at the viewport and looked out in wonder. This is one of those things you dream about, Davison said. Look at them. There must be 1,000 different species out there. I've never seen anything like it, said Holdreth. I computed how much storage space we had left and how many of the thronging creatures outside we would be able to bring back with us. Say, look at that one, Davison said suddenly. I glanced out the viewport and saw a beast about the size of a giraffe, only it had 6 legs, and its eyes, great violet globes, stood out nakedly on the ends of 2 thick stalks. It must have been 20 feet high. It moved with exaggerated grace through the swarms of beasts surrounding our ship, pushed its way smoothly towards the vessel, and peered gravely in at the viewport. 1 purple eye stared directly at me, the other at Davison. Oddly, it seemed to me as if it were trying to tell us something. There was something I didn't like about the place. It was just too good to be true, and I learned long ago that nothing ever is. There's always a catch someplace. Only this seemed to be on the level. Davison and Holdreth were having the time of their lives, hip-deep in obliging specimens. I've never seen anything like it, Davison said for at least the 50th time, as he scooped up a small, purplish, squirrel-like creature and examined it curiously. The squirrel stared back, examining Davison just as curiously. Holdreth came over to me. I don't like this place, I said. Why? It's too easy, much too easy. These animals just flock around here waiting to be picked up. Holdreth chuckled. And you're used to a struggle, aren't you? You're just angry at us because we have it so simple here. I walked away to survey the grounds. There was a thick, heavily wooded jungle not too far from the ship. The forest spread out all the way towards the water in one direction, but ended abruptly in the other. On the other side was a low, broad plain that seemed to trail away into a desert in the distance. I could see an uninviting stretch of barren sand that contrasted strangely with the fertile jungle to my left. There was a small lake to the side. And the animals. They came in all different shapes and sizes, colors and odors, and the only thing they all had in common was their friendliness. During the course of my afternoon's wanderings, 100 animals must have come marching boldly right up to me, given me the once-over, and walked away. This included 6 kinds that I hadn't seen before, plus one of the eye-stalked, intelligent-looking giraffes and a furless dog. Again, I had the feeling that the giraffe seemed to be trying to communicate. I didn't like it. I didn't like it at all. I returned to our clearing and saw Holdreth and Davison still buzzing madly around, trying to cram as many animals as they could into our hold. "How's it going?" I asked. "Hole's all full," Davison said. "Hold it, fellas," I said. I peered at the animal in Davison's hands and glanced up. This is a curious beast. It's got 8 legs. "You becoming a zoologist?" Holdreth asked, amused. "No, but I am getting puzzled. Why should this one have 8 legs, some of the others here 6, and some of the others only 4? They looked at me blankly with the scorn of professionals. "I mean, there ought to be some sort of logic to evolution here, shouldn't there? On Earth, we've developed a 4-legged pattern of animal life. On Venus, they usually run to 6 legs. But have you ever seen an evolutionary hodgepodge like this place before?" Holdreth said, "You're right, Gus. This is peculiar. I think we ought to stay and investigate it fully. I don't agree, I said. I think we ought to leave with what we've got. Davison chuckled. Come on, Gus, don't be silly. This is the chance of a lifetime for us. I didn't want to tell them I was afraid of staying longer. I'm the pilot of this ship, and you'll have to listen to me. Our food is calculated on a pretty narrow margin to allow you fellows more room for storage, and this is strictly a collecting team. There's no provision for extended stays on any one planet. Unless you want to wind up eating your own specimens, I suggest you allow me to get out of here. They were silent for a moment. Then Holdred said, I guess we can't argue with that. But, oh, all right, Davison said reluctantly. He picked up the 8-legged penguins. Let me stash these things in the hold and we can leave. I went inside to begin setting up the blastoff orbit. Feed wires were dangling crazily down from the control cabinet. Somebody had wrecked our drive mechanism, but thoroughly. For a long moment, I stared stiffly at the sabotaged drive. Then I turned and headed into the storage hold. Davison! What is it, Gus? Come out here a second, will you? I waited, and a few minutes later he appeared, frowning impatiently. What do you want, Gus? I'm busy and I... His mouth dropped open. Look at the drive! You look at it, I snapped. I'm sick. Go and get Holdreth on the double. Once I had the cabinet panel off and could see the inside, I felt a little better. The drive wasn't damaged beyond repair. 3 or 4 days of hard work might get the ship back into functioning order, but that didn't make me any less angry. I heard Holdreth and Davison entering behind me, and I whirled to face them. All right, you idiots, which one of you did this? If you're implying that one of us deliberately sabotaged the ship, Holdreth said, I want you to know I'm not implying anything. But the way it looks to me, you two decided you'd like to stay here a while longer and figured the easiest way of getting me to agree was to wreck the drive. I glared hotly at them. Well, I've got news for you. I can fix this, and I can fix it in a couple of days. So go on, get about your business. Get all the zoologizing you can in while you still have time. Davison laid a hand gently on my arm. Gus, he said quietly, we didn't do it. Neither of us. Suddenly, all the anger drained out of me and was replaced by raw fear. I could see that Davison meant it. If you didn't do it, and Holdreth didn't do it, and I didn't do it, then who did? Davison shrugged. Maybe it's one of us who doesn't know he's doing it, I suggested. Maybe... Oh, hand me that toolkit, will you? They left to tend to the animals, and I set to work on the repair job. It was slow, nerve-harrowing work, and by mealtime I decided to give up the job for the day and get back to it tomorrow. I dropped off into a really sound sleep, and the next thing I knew, hands were shaking me, and I was looking up into the pale, tense faces of Holdreth and Davison. I pushed my sleep-stuck eyes open and blinked. Huh? What's going on? Holdreth leaned down and shook me savagely. Get up, Gus. I struggled to my feet slowly. Hell of a thing to do. Wake up a fellow in the middle of the... I found myself being propelled from my cabin and led down the corridor to the control room. Blearily, I followed where Holdreth pointed. And then I woke up in a hurry. The drive was battered again. Someone, or something, had completely undone my repair job of the night before. Let's review the situation, Holdreth said, pacing nervously up and down the control cabin. The drive has been sabotaged twice. None of us knows who did it. And on a conscious level, each of us is convinced he didn't do it. That leaves us with two possibilities. Either, as Gus suggested, one of us is doing it unaware of it, even himself, or someone else is doing it while we're not looking. Neither possibility is a very cheerful one. We can stay on guard, though, I said. Have one of us awake at all times. Sleep in shifts, that is, with someone guarding the drive until I get it fixed. We agreed to that, and I set to work at the drive mechanism. By nightfall, I had managed to accomplish as much as I had the day before. But by morning, it was as if I hadn't done a thing. I give up, I announced, surveying the damage. I don't see any sense in ruining my nerves trying to fix a thing that won't stay fixed. The animals had lost most of their curiosity about us and didn't congregate the way they used to. They were meandering all over the plain, nibbling at little deposits of a white, doughy substance. It precipitated every night. Manna, we called it. All the animals seemed to live on it. By the 8th day, I wasn't even trying to fix the ship anymore. The hunger was starting to get me. But Davison said, I think it's time I told you something. I've been eating the manna for 4 days. It's good. It's nourishing stuff. You've been eating the manna? Something that grows on an alien world? You crazy? What else can we do, starve? I smiled feebly, admitting that he was right. That evening, Davison gathered as much of the manna as he could find, and we held a feast. The following morning, I rose early and got my toolkit. I started towards the control cabin and stopped and looked out the viewport. I went back and awoke Holdreth and Davison. "Take a look out the port," I said hoarsely. They looked. They gaped. It looks just like my house," Holdreth said. "My house on Earth." We approached it while the animals frolicked around us. The big giraffe came near and shook its head gravely. The house stood in the middle of the clearing, small and neat and freshly painted. I saw it now. During the night, invisible hands had put it there, had assembled and built a cozy little Earth-type house and dropped it next to our ship for us to live in. "Just like my house," Holdreth repeated in wonderment. "It should be," I said. "They grabbed the model from your mind as soon as they found out we couldn't live on the ship indefinitely." Holdreth and Davison asked as one, "What do you mean?" "You mean you haven't figured this place out yet?" I licked my lips, getting myself used to the fact that I was going to spend the rest of my life here. "You mean you don't realize what this house is intended to be?" They shook their heads, baffled. I glanced around from the house to the useless ship, to the jungle, to the plane, to the little pond. It all made sense now. "They want to keep us happy," I said. "They knew we weren't thriving aboard the ship, so they built us something a little more like home." "They? The giraffes? Forget the giraffes. They tried to warn us, but it's too late. They're intelligent beings, but they're prisoners just like us. I'm talking about the ones who run this place. The super aliens who make us sabotage our own ship and not even know we're doing it. Who stand someplace up there and gape at us. The ones who dredge together this motley assortment of beasts from all over the galaxy. Now we've been collected, too. This whole damn place is just a zoo." I looked up at the shimmering blue-green sky, where invisible bars seemed to restrain us, and sank down dismally on the porch of our new home. I was resigned. There wasn't any sense in struggling against them. I could see the neat little placard now. "Earthmen. Native Habitat. Sol 3."